Thank you, Hans. 21D discussed the need for disclosure of the relationship between main performance measures and segment measures. The staff reviewed 85 annual reports to compare alternative performance measures with segment measures. Based on the results set out in paragraph 8, we think requirement for disclosure on how and why they are different may be redundant because, first, IFRS 8 requires reconciliation between segment measures and the profit loss of the entity. And second, the board proposal to require reconciliation between NPM and the most directly comparable IFRS defined subtotal or total. Consequently, with these reconciliations and other information provided by the statement of financial performance, we think users would have sufficient information to understand the relationship between these measures if they are different. So here's a question for the board. Do you agree not to require entity to disclose on how and why the NPM differs from the total of the measures of profit loss for the reportable segments, which would reverse the board decision made in January 2018?
Okay. Everybody either still digesting their lunch or are we just in favor? Yes?
Yes.
Yep. 14.
Okay. Well done.
21E.
Frank.
So the last paper, 21E. In last month's board meeting, the board decided that the consultation document for this project should be an exposure draft. The agenda paper 21E, we discuss the transition method and the effective date of any new IFRS requirements included in the exposure draft. In terms of the transition method, requiring retrospective application of new accounting requirements helps achieve a comparability across periods. And we think because our proposals only affect presentation and disclosure, it would not be very burdensome to prepare the comparative information. Therefore, we recommend a retrospective application of any new IFRS requirements arising from this project. As for the effective date, we see from previous projects that the board generally provides an implementation period of at least 18 months. So to allow more time to collect the comparative information, we therefore recommend an effective date of 2 years after the publication of any new standards or amendments. So the question for the board is on the last page. Do board members have agree with the staff recommendation?
Mary?
Two comments to just maybe suggest some tuning of this. One on point A, I'm remembering what I think Daryl said when we were discussing the presentation of exchange gains and losses, and especially items that weren't, and then derivatives that weren't designated, about not wanting to be able to go back and cherry-pick outcomes. And so I think we'll have to think about the conclusions that we reached in that session this morning in terms of what the conditions would be for retrospective application. I agree in principle with it, but I think that's one thing we may have to think through a bit more. That would only be transition rather than on an ongoing basis, and it may be solved by whatever other commentary you put in based on this morning's discussion, but just want to think about that. And the second, Frank, is on B. I think at this point I'd like to say in the ED that we're planning for an 18 to 24-month period because that gives us a little flex. If we get, you know, if we're getting to publication date, I don't want to have to make it 35 months because we would just miss, you know, that last month of 2 years kind of thing.
Thank you.
Doc.
Thank you. Similar point, but I would suggest we do not do the retrospective for unusual items on the NPM because of hindsight. Because unusual item is unusual things, but if you try to do it retrospectively, then you already know what is the outcome of the next year. So then it can be easily manipulated. So therefore, even if we gave up a retrospective application for unusual and NPM, the years we are going to lose is not very much significant. So I would rather propose not doing retrospective for unusual and MPM.
Tom?
Same point as TAC. For the MPMs, some entities may not have any MPMs in the prior period. They may just be introducing it. Some entities may have calculated it slightly different. Now that they're going into the financial statements, they may take a harder look at it. They may consider the audit. And it doesn't. And for the ones that have been disclosing MPMs, people could go to those other documents where they were being disclosed and look if they want. But I think to make everybody go and try and estimate what an MPM would have been in the past is, I don't think, a reasonable thing to do. And it's just going to, I think, add costs and not add very much value.
Tom, just to clarify, do you have the same view for unusual, or is it just for MPM?
Unusual, I wouldn't go as... No, unusual, I think if we have clear enough criteria, I would not extend it to unusual, so I wouldn't totally agree with that.
Councilor Bowser.
Well, I support the staff recommendation without restriction, in fact, and including on this issue of comparatives. On the various points that have been listed as possible impediments, I would note that we, in the decision we made this morning, we didn't make any, we didn't submit the election of not designated derivatives to any form of criterion. So I don't see where there would be insight. But even more so, I mean, on the MPM's requirement, we said that if an entity changes its MPM, it will present comparatives. So and I think there is actual evidence of whether MPMs were present in financial communication, financial reports the previous year. So I don't see where a problem of election would come up. And on unusual items, I think we have design guidance that I would expect to be a good basis for providing relevant information in that area, and I think it would work, including looking in the past.
Daryl? Oh, sorry, Anne.
Do we have to say something about early adoption?
At the ED stage.
Because what I was thinking was, what struck me about this was, we didn't say anything about early adoption, and we often do. And for some people, there's going to be very little change, maybe introducing some new titles or new headings. And I don't know whether we have to say something, because someone might pick it up immediately and say, oh, yes, that's fine for us. We can accommodate it in this way. And therefore, they want to use it before everybody else. So are we going to opine on this?
We haven't specifically addressed early adoption in the paper. I think, in general, we tend to permit early adoption of the standards, unless there's a good reason why not. So I wouldn't see why there would be a reason not to permit early adoption in this case. As you say, it may not be a big change for quite a few entities.
Mm-hmm. Beryl?
So a couple of points. I support the staff recommendation as expressed. To pick up on a couple of the comments that have been raised around the table, I think the significant value in unusual items is the ability to compare numbers over time. And if you're not allowed to identify unusual items that you would have identified in the comparative period, I think you've got the wrong base to start with, and that would detract from the value of it. We have dealt in other standards with how you think about hindsight, and one approach might be that you have to designate what the unusual items are up front, but I think that's something we need to we need to consider, but I would see a lot of value in having that in the comparatives. On the comparative MPM number, I'm not sure I entirely understand what the view would be, and this is maybe a question for staff. So if I'm in my current period and I determine that my MPM is a particular measure, presumably at that point I'm required to provide the comparative measure of that MPM. In other words, I'm looking back at applying this particular methodology backwards. I'm not actually going back a year and saying, what would my MPM have been last year and what is my different MPM this year? So it seems to me that this would fall, I'm not sure that the concern, Tom, that you were concerned about actually comes into play here, because it is simply applying my current period methodology to my prior period outcomes. I don't have to invent a new methodology for the prior period. So I think for me, I think the real value of MPMs and the real value of what we're introducing here is the idea of comparators being able to compare over time. And then I agree with Francois in terms of talking about the issue that we discussed earlier this morning. I don't think we've made a decision on that, so I think for the purposes of what we conclude here, we shouldn't be bringing that into play.
Nick.
Thank you. Likewise, I think I'm comfortable in the retrospective application. Given that we're not requiring entities to have an MPM, I'm not sure we'll have a lot of new alternative performance measures as MPMs necessarily, so the transition should be smooth. On the implementation period, I would like to support Mary's suggestion of rephrasing it to be between 18 and 24 months rather than as it is now, of at least 2 years away.
Mary?
I had a follow-up on two things. One is the MPM. I think... Daryl, what you were saying about it's not what was your MPM in the prior period, it's what, if this is your, the definite, if this is your MPM in the current period, the year you apply, what's the comparative information for that one, that we'd have to bring that out, because otherwise I think many people would start down the route of saying, did I have an MPM in the past? Well, what if that MPM I calculated did not adhere to the limits that we have agreed to place on MPMs in terms of faithful representation? You know, it's some of the generic qualities that the generic requirements in I4S applied. I think Daryl's explanation resolves that, but I think we have to make clear that that's what we mean by retrospective application to MPMs. And in terms of this morning's discussion, well, I know that we didn't agree anything specific. I thought we had flushed out an issue that we had to think about more in terms of, can you wait to the end of the reporting period and decide what non-designated derivatives are part of your risk management, you know, kind of outcome-based. And I thought the general sense was that there needed to be something else built around, not new hedge accounting requirements or squishy hedge accounting requirements, but something about how you determine whether or not they're part of your risk management. I don't know. That's where I was. That was my impression of this morning's discussion.
I had thought that we had expressed the concern and that we'd look to perhaps capture the concern in the way we described it, but I wasn't sure that we'd actually concluded that would have to be in the requirements.
Okay.
And I don't know. Had staff seen there as being a specific, as a result of the decision this morning, that we'd taken a specific decision that we would have to have designation requirements for non-designated relationships?
I don't think I go as far as designated, but are there any constraints around what you can determine at the end of the period was part of your...
It's some sort of evidence of actual risk management.
Yeah. It's maybe a sweep issue that you have to take away and come back on? I don't know.
Rather, sorry, today.
What we took away from the discussion this morning was that based upon the way in which it was worded, which is that it's worded in terms of, is it winter, in terms of risk management activities, and so I would expect if I was an auditor to see some sort of evidence of risk management activities in relation to the non-designated derivatives, but we're not being specific about what exactly that means.
But I think the change that Sue suggested was the change that said instead of may, shall.
No.
That was in relation to...
Okay, am I getting muddled? Okay.
Yes.
Well, maybe I've not been clear about MPMs. I see the comparatives exactly as Daryl described them, but I thought also that highlighting that an MPM may have changed from the previous financial reporting period, which is should also be indicated, not providing the reconciliation of that, but at least indicating that's this change, because it's part of the requirement to explain why those SPMs are particularly relevant in encapsulating aspects of performance. And the change thereof, to me, is important. It was in addition to the comparatives between strictly comparatives.
The problem is with a requirement to indicate that there's been a change in an MPM is that there wouldn't have been something called an MPM in the previous period because we didn't have MPMs as we define them. They may have had non-GAAP figures or alternative performance figures in their financial statements in the previous period, but they wouldn't have had something called an MPM in the previous period. So I think it would be quite difficult to actually require that disclosure.
Part of retrospective. Retrospective means that you apply the definition that is new to something that previously existed. But anyway.
Rachel, it might be a good idea just to make clear what you just said, because I think I hadn't got to where you've got to at all, but I can see now why you get there. So in 2020, I have to define my 2020 MPM, my 2019 MPM, but if I'd used a different MPM in 2019, is there something else I have to do? And I think what you're saying is no, because it's difficult.
I hadn't envisaged that we would have to. That certainly wasn't the thinking when we put together the paper, that you would have to go back and say, oh, well, what would my MPM have been back in 2019 if it hadn't been? I'd looked at it in the way that you had, in terms of saying, I do my comparatives for the current period.
But if I now move on 1 year later, and I'm in 2021, and I do change it from my 2020, I'm going to have to get...
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think what Francoise is saying is, do we need to give relief from that requirement in 2020? Or do we at least need to make clear that that requirement is suspended in 2020?
At the very least, we'd need to make it clear if that's the way.
Is that what you intended, Francoise?
Well, personally, I didn't want to lift the requirement, because I think identification of MPMs at flip-flop are an interesting
signal.
Would that not be disclosed anyway, perhaps as a part of disclosure of effect the implementation of the standard has had? Could be, because I can see how that is useful information now.
I submitted it. It's not a major issue either. Mm-hmm.
Okay, can we vote on this?
Only right. Short, I'm a little bit confused by this discussion, because my understanding was that we're using MPMs as a prerequisite. They should using that in their capital market communication, also outside the financials. That is my understanding.
Yeah.
And in this regard, how would you then see this kind of requirement to have retrospective application, but with the kind of measure which you use this year, but maybe have not used the last year, but we're requiring that? But even if it was not used in capital market communication. So I'm confused with this discussion. And I would say I don't see any reason why we should have comparative information for this management performance measurement. I don't see that.
Are we only talking about transition now or generally?
You're just talking about transition.
Retrospective is for me, then we have at least 1 year comparatives. Yeah,
but you're only talking about transition.
Yeah,
you wouldn't
right.
have it not.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
For the first time application, because I'm confused with what does that mean then for.
Shall we change B to 18 to 24?
Yeah, I think we probably do need to change the question for two aspects. I think there's firstly, the question as we've knit it is that we would say, so we're just dealing with question A at the moment. So we're saying fully retrospective for all aspects of the proposals. I think there were some people who would not apply a retrospective approach to MPMs. So perhaps if we could take everything except MPMs as the first vote and then take a separate vote on whether you would require comparatives for the MPMs.
Okay, everything except MPMs.
14.
13.
We're off 13.
Unusual
should
13.
Be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Oh, and you wanted unusual.
Unusual should not be retrospective.
Oh, so if we could take a vote on both unusual and MPMs, then so
okay.
Would
first,
you?
First, unusual. Should it be retrospective or not?
Should you have comparatives for unusual items?
Well, which your hands up is yes.
Yes.
Yes to okay. Comparatives for unusual items.
12.
And then
MPMs.
MPMs.
Retrospective. Yeah. No, this is we haven't done MPMs. We did everything except MPMs.
Well, it's not the first vote again.
So this is MPMs.
No, just to clarify.
For retrospective.
Retrospective for MPMs.
Seven.
Okay, can we then split the question into two parts? Retrospective.
I'll vote in favour.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And then if we could take the implementation period, there was a suggestion that we change the implementation period for a period of at least 18 to 24 months, rather than the 2 years as written in the paper.
Approximately two years.
At least 18 months.
Yeah.
Agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
11.
No.
Okay. Done?
Oh, done.
Excellent.
Carry on at this speed the rest of the week. Thank you.